program, Finding Your Authentic Path. We will just start with a very brief... Jayarana Madhava, and then go into it. I'm very happy that you all are energized. Here's the energizer with the garland. thank you. Because we will meditate and try to find actually our authentic path. This is the projection. I just have a... Good, Kul Krishna. Jayarata Madhava Kunya Vihari Jayarata Madhava Kunya Vihari Gopi Jana Vallabha Giri Varadani O Gopi Jana Vallabha Giri Varadani Yasoda Nandana Rajadana Dandana Yasoda Nandana Rajadana Dandana Yamuna Chira Panachani Yamuna Chira Panachani Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare 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 Hare
jaya gaura nithai
Hare Krishna. Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pishtaya Bhutale Simate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Pacharine Nivisesa sunyavari paskatyare sadharine Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadara Shri Vasadi Govaktavinda Hare Krishna. I want to again greet all of you affectionately. Let us have a little recap of where we are in our seminar. I want to make sure that you all will recognize the very practical nature of this. It is in very, let us say, private point. It relates to our own way of accessing that unexhaustible pool of the Lord, intelligence, and drawing from that inspirations for our own path. This means we come in contact with a call, a whisper, a murmur, a gentle nudging in us that is there for everyone. I have spoken with a few devotees and friends here, but also before in various parts of the world. And as we were entering into a more, let us say, warm atmosphere between us, a more space where we related personally with each other, I heard from so many that in fact they had received very important inner messages, but somehow the river of inspiration was running dry over the years. We had discussed at that time personally what might be the causes of this. I don't intend to go so much into this this time. I will touch upon it. My purpose here is to help you to again are in contact with that happily flowing river of inspiration. We will start today by repeating a quotation of Srila Prabhupada. So Prahlad Maharaj, Prabhupada says, is expecting when the Lord will call me. That is real mercy. You cannot call God or Krishna. Please come to me and save me. Krishna is not your servant. He does not agree to be your servant. But when he is pleased, he says, he calls you, please come and surrender unto me. Interesting, no? How Krishna's call always means we go a step out of our comfort zone. We need to surrender to his guidance. Please come and surrender unto me. Therefore, we must expect when the master will call me. So then this the sentence, don't try to see God, but act in such a way that God will call you. Please come here. That is wanted. That is bhakti. So we dealt with the question, how do you know really that you are receiving a calling, and identified four or five points. It starts all with you reach it will be persistent, it will come again and again. Persistent inner pull. The second is, Gokrishna, you have to monitor the person, divine nudges. You will see that a strong impulse comes towards you, towards a particular way of acting that you are not yet doing, especially when accompanied by the conviction of a divine influence. I talked today with the devotee, and the devotee told me that she has received over the last 2 years, actually, these nudges to improve in two areas of her spiritual life, and it has become so loud that she cannot not pay attention any longer. The third point is a quiet and certainty beneath doubt settles in you. Yes, there will be tests. Yes, there will be questions that others will put before you, questions which your own mind puts before you. But these questions will never erode that deep certainty that says, no, I must do this, even if the whole world tells me do something else. And there comes now a fourth idea. When you don't act upon the inspiration, you will feel restless and something is missing. So by these indicators, this is what I have identified. There may be more. You can know. Yes. Thank you. Please tell me if I'm not. Should I speak more in the microphone or what is? Closer. Closer. Okay. Now the question, especially for us who are wanting to go on the path of Shastra, Guru, and also Sadhu, will be, are you really sure that this is a divine call, that it is coming from a more than human dimension, and it's not your mind? So there are a few nice criteriums by which you know that you're living actually or acting upon an inner call. The first thing is a flow of events will start. Things come into your life, arrangements, circumstances, people, and you will be able to identify them as being sent from beyond. You reach a state of flow. You suspect you are onto something great. You will feel, I don't know what the future exactly holds for me when I do this, but it will be wonderful. As a result of this increased conviction, when you are living your calling, your output will change. It will be huge, I wrote, but I wrote this under the influence of the American language. You can also say, you will notice, my God, I'm saying something, I'm doing something that I could not have done before. And then you know, oops, I'm think I got one of these calls. Then the next quality is you're making progress. Yes, it's also there. And very simple, you're happy and fulfilled doing it. Yesterday I talked with a very nice devotee who asked me a question and said, perhaps you can ask the question tomorrow in your seminar. What is when you don't feel all this? When you're not in a flow? What is when you feel, oh, my life is so ordinary and hectic, Nate? What when your output is nothing special, like every day? What when you feel you stagnate? And when, what if you feel something is missing still in my life? My dear devotees, this is a question you are meant to ask yourself. It could be that you are not living your inner calling. It could be that you felt an inner calling when you were becoming interested in Krishna consciousness, and you made all these amazing changes in diet, in hairstyle, in clothing. I start with the most external and visible changes, and you became enthusiastic, and you said, no longer hip-hop culture, I'm going into kirtan now, and so on. Remember that time, how empowering that felt, how you could leave the gravitational field of Maya or your habits behind. That was when you followed your inner calling and were empowered by this. So ask yourself, is my life like this? If it is not, you sitting in the right seminar, because we will soon venture into our subconscious mind and beyond and try to get in contact with that inner flow of that inner calling. Mm-hmm. Do you think it's a good question? What if this is not? And could it be that my inner calling is not there? Fine. So now, this was what we brought to your attention yesterday. I met someone in a very unexpected way who followed their inner calling. You must know that I had one friend, he's no longer alive, he was a highly placed bishop in the bishop, oh, I'm not sure if this was his title. No, yes, he was a Jesuit priest, who maintained strong connections to me, a devotee of Krishna, because he wanted to learn Bhagavad Gita and the Gaudiya Vaishnavism, and also to the Franciscanian monks. And when I visited him, we discussed for hours on spiritual subject. He was one of those people who were brilliant and knew many things. I met for the first time a lady, and I was introduced. It was not a lady, it was a young girl. And something about her told me, my God, this is a spiritual person, and she will do something wonderful, but she has not yet found her inner calling. Then, 2 years ago, I went with Kustuba from Wisdom of the Sages and Matsya Avatar, you know, from Italy, and a good number of devotees to Laverna. Do you know what is Laverna? It's a mountain in Italy where Saint Francis saw Jesus. appearing to him. Do you know Saint Francis of Assisi? Have you heard? Brother, son, and so on. A very, very amazing personality. And there I met the same girl. Her picture is here. Can you see her? Is it the sun is not blocking? I think everything in this hall is most wonderful, and when the blenders come, then it's super most wonderful. Can you see something? I can. No. Yes. Middle. Yes. Good. Good. And I didn't recognize her. She had become older. Many years had come past. And but I always felt I have met you, no? So then I sent another devotee to discuss with her, because I had something to discuss with Kostuba. And the devotee said, yes, she is from Germany. Yes, she is from that town where Pfarrer Wiedemann lived, you know, my Christian friend. And then we spoke, and I said, you are now in the dress of a Franciscan nun? Yes. I know you sleep very little. Yes. I know you eat a little bread and water sometimes when you fast. Yes. I know you pray the whole night. Yes. And I know you're not married. Yes. You have no boyfriend. Yes. Why have you, a German girl from a good family, chosen this path of a female renunciant, which is very difficult to do in this age? I can see from your eyes that you are an intelligent person, that you are curious, that you have retained your life. A nun, I mean, the whole society thinks nuns are psychologically blocked. Why have you taken this path? And she said, inner callings. The first time it came when I was a young girl, and I was afraid. I had other plans. It came 2 years later. And then after 4 years, I came here on this mountain and lived. But I was tested. There was someone, a visitor, and we had some. I understood. I said, no need to talk further. Then I went back. I tried to live a normal life. We separated and parted ways. And then the same calling came back again and again. And now I'm here. And I said, tell me, we are talking in German language, no one understands what you say. Are you happy now? My dear devotees, my dear friends and dear skeptics, I have never seen a volcano in action, an active volcano. But here there was one. She began, light came out of her eyes. She said, yes, I'm living my inner calling. Since I made this final decision and I committed myself, even after my initial mistake, I am the most happy person. And as she talks, I know she looks a little rigid here on this photo, but perhaps because, you know, Indians are also like this. When you take a photo, they they freeze. Perhaps it happens to you also. No, to Pandavasenas, this never happens. I have seen, they go like, you. But normal Indians, maybe she really looks a little stiffy-eyed, but she was not. She was moving like an angelic being. And I saw another Franciscan monk the same day. He came from the desert in Africa. He was very tall and he moved really with graciousness. He was free. She was free. She had followed her calling and said, "Congratulations! It's very wonderful. I wish you all the best. Please wish me also the best on my path." And it was a wonderful meeting of someone who was a living volcano. You should have seen the fire which jumped from her eyes. Really wonderful. Yes, it happens in all traditions because it's a universal truth. The Lord is calling, come on, come on, come on. Now, in order to fulfill the call, something might be necessary that in literature has been, as far as I know, first presented by Joseph Campbell, the hero with a thousand faces. He has described, after studying the world literature, something that he is known as the hero's journey. We will have a slide here for you. It is something that you can see everywhere. I like to give the example of Dhruva Maharaj. Dhruva Maharaj was in a conflicted situation, as you know, and then on the request of his, or on the inspiration of his mother, he left that conflicted situation. He left actually the palace and went into the wilderness where he met a saint, Narada Muni, who actually sent him home first. It was a temptation to stop his journey, but he persisted, and then the saint gave him a mantra. You know that mantra. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Please. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. He chanted it. He fasted for long days and nights. It was almost as if he had to go through deprivation, and then he came out and actually received something which is called a revelation. Krishna appeared before him, and then he returned. These stations which Dhruva Maharaj took are classical and traditional for anyone who receives and then follows the inner calling. It starts with Gokrishna, a call to uncertainty. Here it says adventure. The inner call says, go now, like in this, is her name Clara? No, her name was another name. Let me see. I remember her as Clara, but that's because a famous Franciscan monk. Angela was her name. Like angel. That's where the angel comes from. A call to move out. Our Dhruva Maharaj first heard it from his mother. You need to meet the Lord, and he is in the forest. And then Dhruva heard this call, and he went out, actually. The next thing is you usually meet a mentor, someone who helps you. Here it is said as a supernatural aid. Someone or something comes in your life. Perhaps in your life it was you met a Sankirtan devotee who gave you a Bhagavad Gita, and so on. Then you come to something like a threshold where you need to make the difficult decision. Am I going to follow the inner call or not? All of you here have once made that, stepped over the threshold, but many of you have fallen asleep and become lazy and dissatisfied, and so on. So as you cross again and again over the threshold into a new adventure that Krishna puts before you, there will be challenges and temptations on the way. You enter a little dark area. I like this photo here. It's dark. And then you even have to go to something like you have to reinvent yourself. Here it says death and rebirth. It's a little dramatic, but it can be just reinventing ourselves. And as you act upon the new information, your character will transform. And then, my dear devotees, you come out of the uncertain area and step into the light. You get a gift, a present, an amazing thing. And then the most important thing is coming. Oh, Krishna, you must return with that special knowledge. I remember when I had become a devotee, I mean, I'm still trying to become, but when I had joined the Hare Krishna movement, I said, what is about all my friends, all those precious, curious, wild, intelligent young boys? And I decided I must return. So I told the director of my school, it was we call them gymnasium in England, you call them high school, that I want to return and share the gift with me. Everyone knew about me, that I had joined a movement of monks. And of course they said, yeah, but welcome, tell us what you have experienced and what you have. And I went back to the school. My dear devotees, we went to the music hall. There was a huge music hall in the old school. And we did a kirtan. And half of my friends joined, the other was extreme, other half was so skeptical. I don't want to describe their facial expressions to you. Arrogant Germans from rich families, oh, you don't want to meet those. Mm-mm. And then was time for discussion. And I was a new devotee. I said, I don't, I asked an older devotee to give an explanation of Krishna consciousness, but it was a little bit conservative. Nowadays we would say old school. It didn't appeal to that 50% in the hall of critical people, and they all started a ruckus and said that that's not good, what you say, it's not logical. Let me ask you a question. And then came a provoking catch question, you know, where you can't, where the one who spoke would always lose his face. So the older devotee said, that's not a question which you asked me. And then these young rebellious kids were saying, that's not an answer which you give. And it started to get wild and unruly and so on. And I said, oh no, I wanted to share the gift. Then I stepped forward. I was a very young devotee. And I said, may I speak now? After all, I went to the school and you want to see me. And I asked the older devotee for permission. And I said, so everything calmed down, and they wanted now to hear from me, the runaway from school. And I remember, as everything was settling down, I prayed to Krishna, please give me some intelligence. I don't know the philosophy very good. So then they were like, you are now. Well, one has gotten up. That was not the case. Everyone was silent. You broke the rule. It's all right. It's all right. So everything was silent. And I just said, my dear everyone, I heard a call that I must leave the life which I lived before. I resisted the call for half a year. Then I went to London. I left Germany and I met an enlightened teacher, Prabhupada. And I can tell you, I feel great relief in my life. Everyone looked at me, and first they wanted to see, is he real? Is that real? But it was so real. I was speaking what I had experienced, that there was this call, and I've resisted it for half a year, and then I followed it, and I met an enlightened soul, and now I'm relieved. And everything calmed down, and we had a second kirtan, which I didn't even look at those who were, some are never satisfied. My dear devotees, this is called a journey, a call to adventure, and it's so strong. It's archetypical, Sigi Jung would say. In other words, you find it in all psychologies, in all traditions, that a call to get out of your comfort zone. There is a book which some of you have read. I couldn't read it very long, but it's eat, chant and pray. So it was very, can someone help me? It's about a lady who lives an unsatisfying life. And what? Eat, pray, love. A very, very well-read book. There's another book which deals with it, which I have read in its entirety. It's called The 40 Rules of Love, where the teachings of Shams, the teacher of Rumi, are very nicely summarized. It is, not every one of you is a literary freak, you know, a person who's into literature. No need to read, but it's always there. People feel compressed in some reason, in some ways, and they hear something, and then, my dear devotees, they are not like most of the Hare Krishnas, they don't act upon it any longer. They act once about it. They act upon it, and miracles start to happen. Sorry, most of the devotees are not like this, but I'm getting into my mood. The juice is flowing, and I want to bring you to a certain place. I want to now try to bring you in contact with your inner calling. Are you into this?
Yes.
How attentive are you? Do you need another energizer or not need? We can open the windows. Let me look at you. Men look all right. Ladies, I don't want to look so closely. To connect with your inner calling or your intuition or the voice of the super soul, it is absolutely necessary that you come into a peaceful state of mind. When there is so much noise in, or loud thoughts in your mind, in your busy mind, the often subtle voice of the inner calling cannot be heard, or it is distorted by something else and not clear enough to act. Therefore, the ideal situation which facilitates an awakening to our inner calling is when you step away from your various routines, relationships, and create a space for introspection. In the retreats which we give in India, we have created such a space for the participants. We take them to the Govardhan Hill and then ask them to find a spot in the shade of these wonderful ancient trees. And then we, as they go to their spot, that's the start of Monam, when they are silent. They do not speak anything with anyone else. They find their spot. They engage in an exercise that brings them in contact with what is inside. It's called free writing. And then they pray and chant or read sacred literature and let the affect work. And then it takes 2 hours, and they come usually out of these spaces deeply moved. Not everyone may hear an inner voice, inner calling. That's something very sacred and can't be just produced on the snap of a finger. Space or peaceful time is absolutely necessary for each one of us. Where you go, for instance, to a still lake, a place in nature, ocean, and so on, in the stillness of the mountains, and you come into a situation where you know, I have now all the time to figure it out. And it is when the pulls and urges of your ordinary life don't pull at you, then the deeper things can surface without distraction. I would, before I start leading you into a meditative experience, advise really that each one of you have regular time out, me time, you call it in the world, but I would like it. I would like to call it time with Krishna, where you gently review your life and deepen your connection to your intuition or that voice of the super soul. I think at least every 3 or 4 months, or whatever works best for you, you should do this. I know one god brother of mine. He is quite well known in our movement. Ranshaw, do you know Ranshaw? He has written this very nice form of Gita. He went to a place here in north of England. Is it called the Lakes or what? Lake District. Lake. And he went into a simple furnished room. He took long walks at a time when he needed answers in his life, and he found a new take on life which helped him to move on. I really recommend you to do this. What we can do here is something that hopefully will set you on the way. Let me now create an ideal circumstance. I think we can now close the windows because it's a little cold, at least for me. Is everything comfortable here? How are you, Naveen Krishna? I see you have the windows up. Is it too cold, maybe? No, is this good? I'm sorry? No, if it is. Will there be any wrestling and will the Scottish people invade with the weapons to take England back? Or no, it is a safe place, yes. English history is quite something. Let me see. What is with your, could you see that your mobile telephones are please switched out? Because sometimes a call comes and it's really like, oh. Switch off the phones.
Which melody? Mayapur.
Is this loud enough or too loud? Tike?
Good.
I would like you. To collect your thoughts a little bit. Are we sure we have avoided distractions? I think we should post one person at the entry, because anything which we do, there's always distraction. Maybe Abhiram, yes, you are the good man. When someone comes in or someone faints, or anything, you take care of it. You cannot meditate, okay? No, I'm saying. At this moment, please don't meditate. You are very apt in meditation. That's not what I... You're always so joyful. So... Please sit straight for a moment, and with your eyes still open, settle into your seat. And tell yourself, I will now embark on a quest, on a search. I hope to come in contact with something that is my inner calling. And give your best and maintain your attention on this this idea. I want to come in contact with that divine inner voice. When you are ready, close your eyes. Watch your in and outgoing breath. Breathe in and out in a relaxed way, and have a gentle curiosity of things which are to come, while remaining very alert. Kindly relax the lower part of your body. Start with your feet. If you can't feel them, just in English you say wiggle your toes, you know, move them a little and relax. Move your attention up to your knees, relaxed, like feeling gravity, you know. Your muscles, everything relax as you move up your spine, lower back, up, higher back. Relax. The belly area and the chest. Relax. Direct your attention to your shoulders and your upper arms, and let them fall in a way or relax. If you allow me to zoom into your shoulders are still a little stiff. You need to relax more. Bring your attention to your shoulders and give the command, let go now. Better. Go up your back of your neck, back of your head, crown of your head, and relax. Forehead. The sockets of the eye, the eye caves, I think. Relax. The cave of your mouth, the jaw. Relax. Appreciate for a moment how you now sit here in a very relaxed way, alert, a resident in your body, and curious to see what will come. By the way, if it is natural that some of you will cough because of the relaxation, it's no problem. No problem. Again, we go now to the bridge of our breath. Whenever you exhale, make sure that you exhale a little bit longer. Walk with that long exhalation. This will automatically lengthen your inhalation. And as you bring your entire thought process on your in and out breath, try to maintain that alert and relaxed inner state. Let the world disappear for a moment. Your jobs or your projects, finished or unfinished, let them go, gone. Your endless plans or thought processes, gone. You're now just sitting there, all by yourself, safe with your breath. bring your attention now to your heart area, please. As you breathe in, you may feel some energy or lightness increase. And as you breathe out, you will relax even a little further. It is here in your heart that the real you, the true self, exists. And it is here where the Lord exists. We will listen now attentively to three questions. Dwell on these questions, but do not answer them with your mind. Let answers arise from within. Don't give your own ideas or thoughts to the questions. You look for answers that come from beyond your mind and your thoughts. What signs or gentle nudges have appeared lately in my life, pointing me towards a specific direction, perhaps that I should move on from one habit? Perhaps these signs told me there's room for improvement in a certain area of my life. What signs or gentle nudges have repeatedly appeared in my life, pointed me toward a specific direction in which might feel like higher guidance? Anything that has appeared in my life repeatedly. Just sit in the space and see if something comes. The second question, much easier. If I weren't afraid of failing or being judged, is there something that I would dare to pursue? Again, don't answer the question from your mind. Let an answer arise, if it is meant to arise. If I would not be afraid of failing or being judged, what would I dare to pursue? Perhaps even what would I dare to drop in my life? And the last question, what is one small but meaningful action that I can take after the retreat to respond to what my heart already knows I should do. One small but meaningful action that I can adopt as a response to what my heart already knows I should be doing. Take a few deep breaths and stay in this relaxed, calm, yet alert space. And sing very prayerfully and softly. Perhaps in a mood of gratitude, perhaps in a mood of I come back and next time it will maybe more clear, but a turn to Krishna. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare. Continue to chant. Make sure that you remain conscious, alert, and direct your attention to that supreme Lord inside, from whom come all this knowledge and remembrance, and also the covering which we need to forget. Please, everybody sing now. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, sit a little. I will leave you now with one question. What feels most alive and urgent for me to express or to start to express now in my life? What unique gifts or talents has Krishna entrusted to me, and I need to express or bring them into my life? My dear everyone, it's time to offer our gratitude for the experience, whatever it is. You may take a few deep breaths, rub your hands together like this, and then gently bring them to your eyes, the palms of your hands. Just rub the eyes a little and come back to room awareness. Give yourself a little time. Mm-hmm. thank you very much. Again, I want to say, it's important for me to say, when at this first attempt, nothing was alive in me except the need to sleep more or whatever, that's all right, that's fine. It may take a few times where we sensibilize our life and for these things. If something came, like I know for sure I should go to Hawaii and start a Krishna conscious dancing school, wait for 2 weeks before you go to Hawaii and start a Swami step school. If it's still strong after 2 weeks, you might want to pay attention to this, but like this, no? It's also very good if something came to either write it down or make a mental note, but then do something which we are not accustomed in Pandavasenas. Don't talk about it to others before it's very clear, no? Sometimes these things are a little bit like, you know, when you want to show a slideshow and it's out of focus, then you need to focus it a little, and sometimes the inner calling needs time to focus. Of course, if you have a super close friend and you just explode, then before you explode, then share it with a super good friend. We are in excellent time. Let me see, is there any question regarding this? I see Mukunda Hari. Is your name Mukunda Hari? Yes. Yes, Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Just in general, with this whole theme of the retreat around authenticity, I recognize it's so important to have a sense of confidence and be secure in your authentic path. But equally, it's important to take the example of people who are better than you and benchmark and take inspiration and learning. But that often gets kind of conflated with unhealthy comparison, or it becomes unhelpful. So I wonder, what's the best way to stay secure and confident in your authentic path while still being able to learn from the example of others and benchmark and seek improvement?
Let me ask you, did something come up? No, Mukunda Hari.
Maharaj, so many times you get very well-intentioned feedback and advice from others.
Yeah, and no, you didn't understand my question. When you meditated, did something come up for you?
I wondered what I could do.
Good. Let's say something turned up. You had a question. A question came up. Yes? Good. One's authentic path is something very precious. It's very concrete. Before it shows up, it is very good to take inspirations here and there, follow the benchmark, no? But when it comes, you may also go into the forest and start something entirely new. So until that moment, when it comes, it's very good to follow good examples and so on, which, you know, there is also something like finding our authentic path. We might also use the technique of priming. priming is something I learned in India when the pump from where I was drawing water to bathe myself suddenly gave up and I was all soaked. And I was standing there, I never go to India again. I knew this would happen. I'm now out in the, with soap all over and can't get it off. Then someone came to me and said, it's very easy, you have to prime the pump. Acha? So he brought some water, poured it up in the pump, and then said, try again. And then I tried. First it sounded like an aggressive donkey. But then, because there was water, the something which is called traction jumped into place and I could pull up more water from the ground level. So priming ourselves for spiritual inspirations, finding our authentic path is done when you follow the in a few ways which I would like to show to you. And Mukunda, I will talk to you privately about this comparison with others. It diverts our attention from the flow where I wish to go at the moment. I will talk privately. What can you do to prime yourself? Do you understand priming? So there is a pump. It doesn't pull water up any longer because the connection of the pumping system to the ground water level is interrupted. But by pouring water there into the pump, the water will go down the pipe and a connection will be made to the groundwater level, and then when you pump with a pumping machine, this phenomena of traction, do you understand what it is? It's pulling force. It can act, it can connect again because you have put water in there and then zoop, it draws water and it comes out. Maybe you need to go to an Indian pump and see it for yourself. You pour water, when it doesn't work, you pour water down, up, and it goes down, and then it goes. So in the same way, there are some things that you can bring into your life, and when you use these things, then the source of inspiration is contacted, and the flow of inspiration comes to your life. So what can you do? It all starts, I would say, get on the divine communication wavelength by cultivating Prayojana Bodh. I know it's incomprehensible. Prayojana Bodh, let's start there, is an awareness of your ultimate goal in life. And keep that awareness with you, almost like an Indian lady who carries a jug of water on her head. She does many other things like talking to her neighbors, breastfeeding a child, but she's always aware there is the water on my head. So you are good as long as you are aware of your water on your head. It means your ultimate goal in life. When you forget this, bang, disaster. The water jug falls down and wettens the lady, embarrassingly she has to return back to the well. She has to retrace all her steps to get water anew. So you must keep your sacred goal in life over your head, like an Indian village lady keeps the awareness of the water pot over her head. This is Prabhupada's example. While you do your other things, like the lady will talk and walk and breastfeed and everything, while you do your other things, remain aware of Krishna. And this you can do, I suggest, by working in three areas in your life. First area, read and chant. Some of you were able to use the morning hours, others were very late in bed, I understand, and they needed the rest. Fine. But have you noticed that you sit and you make your mind absolutely free and focus it on Krishna? Same with reading. It creates an awareness of your Prayojana Bodh, your highest goal. Then, have good sangha and sadhana. You know all these words. And finally, ask Krishna, continue to ask questions and pray for the answers. This will keep you on the divine communication wavelengths. I call this DC, not like Washington DC or AC/DC. Divine communication, and then if you keep the channel open, inspirations flow. Some of us are not yet on the wavelengths, my dear devotees. We are practicing Krishna consciousness, but we miss the point of Krishna consciousness, to remember Krishna in everything and please him in everything. So get on the divine, you know, radio. In radios, you would tune your radio and get on the wavelengths. Here is London, BC. The weather will be terrible as expected. You have the right wavelengths. Now you know that you need a raincoat and so on. No? So divine communication is the same. By reading, chanting, doing sangha and asking and praying, first it's unclear, but then it will become increasingly clear. So that one day you can say like Prabhupada, Krishna tells me. Once a devotee asked Prabhupada, a journalist asked Srila Prabhupada, Prabhupada, do you know what every disciple does in service to you? Prabhupada says, yes. And so the journalist thought he had not understood the question. Say, you are in America, the disciple is in Europe, do you know what he does for you? Prabhupada said, yes. The journalist went like, how do you know? And Prabhupada said, Krishna tells me. Of course, that's the highest level of divine communication, but these will, being aware of what is the goal, what is the point of everything, and then purifying your heart by reading and chanting and doing these things and asking again and again, will ensure Bhagavad Purana, that you are guided from within. And then your face will always show great happiness. Yes, it's like this. My dear devotees, here I'm a little bit now short because I come to the surprise of this session. Where would we be without Navin Krishna's guidance, his initiative to start Pandava Sena, his even building this room for us? You know, it was not here, there was only this room, you know, behind the acoustically proof walls. And I thought, I have requested him to at the very end address all of us and give us a message. But how do we close this? Is it okay? Did present received? Yes. Do you recognize it's necessary to get to awaken this? Probably that's the point of Krishna consciousness, to be aware of Krishna. He said he will give guidance to us. Te sham satata yoktanam vajatam priti purvakam, and give us the knowledge by which we come from, come to him. If you don't feel the inspiration, there is something which you yet have to develop, something where you need to look, something. You know, when I was a child, I prayed every day to the Lord, and I got answers. And when I came to Krishna consciousness, I prayed. No, I stopped doing this because I thought, I don't want to be a sahajiya, someone who does things wrong. So I had overlooked this area, and I wanted to say this. These are all very deeply embedded concepts in our philosophy, and when we learn to relate to them, we will become very, very guided in our life, and we will this restlessness and the feeling something is missing will stop. Hare Krishna. I want to end here. Thank you very much. And now I want to invite Naveen Krishna Prabhu. We have this wonderful seat for you. It is already warmed up for you. Hare Krishna. I'm just...
Despite the red arrow pain noises through the meditation, and then I felt guilty that I couldn't stop that, so I can't meditate or stop pain. But thank you so much.
You would have come out and said, one hand up.
In case you wonder where my wit comes from, it's a legacy. So thank you so much, Maharaj, for leading us on a final session. You did say we don't know where we would be in Padre Seno without Nikki Krishna, but I think that same applies in the mentorship system for you. You've been a spiritual leader who's invested so much time at a time that we needed the most. So we're grateful for that, and we're hoping that you all took something away from these three sessions in session one. So, in order to express our gratitude and appreciation and to stop the pain, we'll then raise our left hand in the air and our right hand in the air and thank Satchinanda Maharaj for being with us and being so wonderful. Three very, very loud Hari Bols.
Hari Bols! Hari Bols! Hari Bols! Hari Bols!
And now to introduce Nivin Krishna Kul, it's Nivin Krishna Kul.
I was trying to get away on this trip without doing a talk, but I'll try and be as quick as I can. Yeah, we can't get it both working on both, so you can all see that, right? Yeah, okay. You've heard this word sat and asat, yeah? So the first time I heard it, sung was by Satchinanda Maharaj, where he sings Asapilma Sakamaya. You've heard that. And those of you who want to invite it, Bhakti Karanda sings every day. So what does that mean? What does sat and asat mean? Okay, so what is true and what is false in this context? What is sat and what is asat? What is sat? Yeah, I know, but what does that refer to? Krishna, okay, what else?
Something which is down.
Okay, so what are the qualities of the soul?
Unmerited.
Satchit Ananda, consciousness, yeah? So normally when you're just talking about Sat, you're talking about Brahman, and everything else is Asat. Yeah? So that's how we normally understand Vedic tradition's kind of description of reality. Now look at these two. One is from the Taittiriya Upanishad, and the other one is from the Rig Veda. In the beginning of this creation, there was only Asat. And from the Rig Veda, the Supreme Mind was created from Asat. Make sense? No? Why not? It's calling Brahman Asat. Got it? Okay. We haven't got time to explain it, but that's what have we learned about our authentic path and purpose on this trip? And there were two most important principles that came to my mind. But the two most important lines that I will come back to it if we've got time, but that I really loved from this trip, right? So one of them was Kanchan Virabhu was saying that our authentic path and purpose, it's something that you make up, right? So it's something that you make up and you synthesize from the things that you've learned. And then such an other marriage is the second one. It's not something to be invented. Clear? Everyone's got it. So obviously they know the answer to this, but from I'd like to hear, like, how do you reconcile these two statements? Because it took me a little while, but I think I got there in the end. Luckily we've got an hour in the afternoon with Shandri to clarify any misunderstandings. But how do you reconcile these two? Yeah.
When Ramachandra was saying it's something you make up, I thought it's you make it up like, in relation to Guru Sahib Shastra, so you're still like doing it in line with that.
Okay.
And so that's it, it's not like completely made up.
A little bit made up.
No. It's not completely made up because you're doing it in line.
Okay, so just a little bit made up.
You have a bit of creative.
Creative license. James.
Is it that it's not invented? Passive and sit around waiting for something to happen. You have to actually engage. You have to have some agency, but it's not invented. But okay. You can't sit passively.
Yeah. Yes, please. Listen.
So maybe from the point of the view of the soul, you kind of invented your past at some point, but you just forgot. So it's already there. You don't need to invent it at this point in time. But from the point of the mind that forgot about it, it seems like I'm needing to do something to make it happen.
I felt there was a difference between the expression of our path purpose and the origination of it, where it comes from, what it's rooted in, what that seed, like the source of where it sprouts from.
It's something that's unique to you, and it's not about looking at somebody else's path and taking that on for yourself.
Great. Others? Okay, awesome. So I think there are different ways to actually look at this and reconcile it, and I don't think that there's a kind of necessarily a right or wrong. I think one of the interesting things was I saw in the context of what we were talking about 10 months ago in the last mentorship trip. And some of you remember this. Who was here last time? Who was not here last time? Oh, seriously? Okay, quite a few. Okay, so we went through this cycle. I'm going to give you the whole spiel, but basically, hard times lead to strong men and women, and that leads to good times. Good times lead to weak men and women, and that leads to hard times. Yeah? You recognize this, those of you who are there. And for those of you who are not, this is quite a famous thing by Hoff. I forget where he said it, but I think it was in some kind of speech. But essentially, when we see this, one of the things that it's got a nice intuitive feel to it. We kind of see where it's going, what the we connect to it somewhat. But there's something that we think that. Well, how do we resolve that? Like, what do we do about that? Because there's a sweet spot there, right? And the sweet spot is that we want to be considered strong, but we also want to have good times, isn't it? Like we will. So, but the issue is that how do we maintain that without falling either before and after? So, like this idea of we want to have our cake and we want to eat it. And I feel that there's this question that it led me to in reconciling these two points about one is the, you know, that cycle around good times and strong people, and then the other is about purpose and how we are required to have some agency in it and yet recognize that this is part of my spiritual identity and therefore already there. So if you think about this, what would you replace those three question marks with? What is the thing that leads to both enjoyment and liberation? So if you consider liberation as a bit which is around strong people, so from our perspective, like strong people is the thing that leads you to liberation because it's about kind of stoicism, whatever it is. And then there's enjoyment, which is the good times. What is it that leads to both of these things?
Prashadam.
Oh, quite a few. Prashadam. Who said prashadam? I understand. Okay, so, sorry, people have got something to say. Who had that?
No,
yeah.
Service.
Service, okay. Yep. Yep.
Action.
Knowledge. Yeah.
Bhakti.
Okay. So, in the Vedic tradition, like, because you guys all go straight to devotion, right? So, like, pride, just a step before that. Like, so you've heard of this idea, dharma. Okay. So, when this idea of the whole point, like the role of dharma in terms of now coming back to this idea of when we talk about dharma, it's the enactment of one's purpose, right? So, all the way from one's individual dharma contextually, like swadharma, and all the way through to sanatana dharma, which is like our eternal spiritual dharma. And in a material context, that the enactment of one's internal swadharma, i.e. to do with varna and ashrama, that leads to enjoyment. So dharma leads to artha, i.e. the generation of wealth, karma, the enjoyment that comes from that wealth, and that then leads to liberation. Strange. That's not how we normally frame it, but that is how the Vedic tradition frames it. It frames it in terms of us going through that cycle, which is slightly, sounds a little contrarian to how we normally think about devotion, as in relinquishing enjoyment and, you know, artha and karma and going straight to liberation. And this is a verse, one of the first letters that my spiritual master wrote to me, he referenced this in terms of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's instructions to Raghunath Das Goswami, when Raghunath Das Goswami is saying that he wants to give up everything and come to the association of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, you should not make yourself a showboat of a devotee and become a false renunciate. For the time being, enjoy the material world in a befitting way and do not become attached to it. I thought this I mean, what I found really interesting when I first heard this, is that when I read this, when I received this, I had CC at the time. But the instruction from Lord Chaitanya to the embodiment of renunciation for our tradition is Raghunath Das Goswami. He is the absolute embodiment of renunciation. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is saying to him, for the time being, enjoy the material world in a befitting way. Why would he say that? Like, why is that something that we are, I mean, he's not, what is the purpose of that instruction? Why not just say, is somebody so elevated, so advanced, etc., etc., just come straight to devotion without, like, skip up, get Lucas?
It meets you where you're at.
Meets you where you're at.
Being brought along.
Okay, being brought along. Okay, yeah, Krishna.
Yeah, maybe if you don't renounce, then you might become more attached. So I think if you enjoy it, then like you're getting it out of your system.
Yeah, okay. Peter's on.
Would it be maybe to be an example to the people around them?
Yes.
They may not understand the maturity, the genuineness sometimes that someone's facilitating.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So all of these pastimes have different levels, and that's definitely one of them. In an ordinary sense, in terms of our own level, most of us, the vast majority of us, are not going to be staying in the ashram long term. So we're going to be staying in the material world. And this idea of enjoying the material world in a befitting way links with this idea of the psychological development of an individual through their life, and therefore the renunciation that's appropriate at the right stages in one's life. Because if we don't go through that process, the risk is that that renunciation, when artificially kind of practiced artificially prematurely, that it comes up in the wrong way later on. And this idea that, you know, when Krishna is telling us to do our duty, as Maharaj was referencing, like the verses connected to that, rather than somebody else's. Because that falsity, that, what's the opposite of authentic?
Inauthentic,
thank you. So that inauthenticity, basically, what that leads to is not only harmful for me, it's harmful for you and for society at large. Because I'm harming myself, and I'm, sorry, that's the wrong example for everybody else, because I'm carrying that. And, you know, we see so many examples of that, right? So, like, in the world. So, I think what, I think what I just wanted to really convey was, we will hear different perspectives from different devotees in different stages of their life and their journey and their spiritual, in their spiritual journey. And we have to have the kind of ability to be able to see how the principle or essence of what they're saying applies to our life. And when particularly it comes from that variety that's exhibited in all of our scriptures, particularly you see it in the Srimad Bhagavatam, and for us to then be able to take that, take the essence of what's being said. And do you remember Keshav Maharaj's question to Sachinanda Maharaj was about, I might know, like, there's the calling and then there's the timing of the calling, like, and he asked that question. So it's a very important point, that how does that then fit in the kind of flow of things, and when is it appropriate? And to really root ourselves in being authentic means that we have to be thoroughly honest. That's that phrase that comes from the Bhagavatam, which again, it's actually such a profound point. To be thoroughly honest with ourselves is so difficult, because sometimes, for all of the reasons that we might be inauthentic, one of them is that I'm not just trying to convince and live up to other people's expectations and earn their whatever. I'm also trying to convince myself that I'm that person that I want to be, and therefore I may take on so many things which are just not authentic. So I'm going to end there because I feel like I'm going on and on and on. So thank you so much. I just wanted to kind of make that point, and hopefully there's some value in it for you. Thank you. Hare Krishna.